Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Smoke Pit Storytime. Tonight's episode, I've got Skip, a.k.a. Calacitarian15. You can find him on Twitter, at The Free Rifleman. If you want to find me, your host, that's VetArchist Actual, you can find me on Twitter at VetArchistOG. You can also find the show page on Instagram at Smoke Pit Storytime. And since everybody's stuck inside and ordering a bunch of BS on Amazon, if you really help me out and wouldn't cost you anything extra, you could use my Amazon affiliate link, which is VetArchistOG-20. And every time you order something from Amazon, they give me a little cut. Doesn't cost anything extra, but it helps out the show. Also, the other things that could help out the show, take a little bit of time, and they're also free. If you could, please like, share, and if you could, just take a couple seconds and give a review. If I get a 5-star review, maybe I'll read it on the show. I don't know. If you leave a bad one, I'm going to make fun of you on the show. Just saying. But anyway, hope you guys enjoy this one. We'll kind of go into a little bit of everything, but I think you guys will like it. Hey Skip, how's it going, man?
What's up, brother? How you doing?
Pretty tired. I got a sinuses full of pollen and just trying to breathe.
Yeah, this is a real fun time to have allergies in the middle of a pandemic.
I know. I was just thinking, even if I'm not in the at-risk pool, my sinuses are so inflamed that probably does push me over into that direction.
I was outside working this morning in my garage, and I was kind of outside the garage, like right there in the little driveway area. Mm-hmm. And I was picking something up, and all of a sudden it just hit me and I sneezed, and I thought to myself, oh, I hope nobody saw me sneeze. That's the world we live in right now, huh?
Dude, I sneezed in the Kroger like a week ago.
Oh. And I'm surprised they didn't have you arrested.
Yeah, well, you know, I went into the sneeze, you know, I tucked my head into the sneeze pocket, you know, the crook of your elbow. And this guy was mean mugging the hell out of me. And I was like, it's allergies. It's upper respiratory, not lower respiratory. We're good. But he just was freaking out.
I've got a really mean story for you.
Let's hear it.
And you're going to like it. So my one of my coworkers is, his wife is Korean. Mm. And they had gone somewhere, and this is before, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. So it was before everybody started getting too edgy.
Right.
And they had gone somewhere, and I don't know where they were, but it was in public. It was, you know, like maybe at the the local bingo hall or whatever it was. But she started coughing and coughing and coughing. And he looked at her and he said, "If you don't pipe down, I'm going to have you shipped back to China."
Oh, God.
and I told him, I said, oh, that's a level of wrong. My wife would kill me if I did that to her.
Yeah, I think I'd get cut for saying something like that.
I'm telling you. I mean, you got to sleep sometime, right? Yeah. And I mean, I think they've been married probably 15, 18 years or something like that. But I just thought to myself, wow, he has that sense of humor though. So.
Oh yeah, sure. Do you ever see the old Bill Ingvall bit about the first year of marriage versus the 20th year of marriage?
Yeah.
That was so great. When your first year, you start an argument just for the makeup sex. And then 20 years later, you start an argument just so they'll leave you alone.
I need some alone time.
Yeah. Before I forget, do you want to go ahead and do your plugs?
Well, you know, okay, so of course I'm checking out the news, and I found a couple different stories, and I wish I could find the one that I saw this morning, but it talks about how, you know, it pays to be rich during a pandemic. I don't know if you've seen any of the stories about how the wealthy are renting these, you know, chalets and stuff like that, that are just out in the middle of nowhere. And instead of just renting a room, they rent the whole place to them and their family.
Hmm.
And it kind of resonated a little bit with me, because you could tell that the narrative was hate rich people, which is always popular with the news media. And since we were on the subject of the bee pigs, which I can break that out here in a second, but you know, while we're on the subject of the bee pigs, it kind of rubs me a little bit, because you know, it's ironic that the media, which are definitely an enemy of the people, how they want to hate the rich, and they want the populace to hate the rich, but ultimately that's who writes their agendas and that's who signs their paychecks. It's like a dichotomy.
Yeah. It's just like building a community of envy.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's like, you know, we have to have a common enemy, and
it can't be, it can't be us versus them. It's got to be them versus them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the media can't take the large percentage of the population and make them the enemy, because that's who they rely on to, well, maybe prop up their ratings, but their ratings can be manipulated too, just like anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like they have this, this desire to manipulate. And for some reason, it seems like the bottom end of the economic spectrum is a lot easier to manipulate than the top end of the economic spectrum. So, and there's a myriad of reasons for that, but social engineering and Bertrand Russell and all kinds of really good podcasts out there that get into that as to how they're able to control people. But, you know, I think Bertrand Russell kind of outlined it in a way that eventually governments will be able to control people without the need of police or armies. I haven't seen that yet, but I think I have seen a percentage of compliance in an era now that probably would have been impossible 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah, Edward Bernays would be really happy how things are turning out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You get people secluded into their, what does he call it? A logic-proof bubble.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we can't have that here.
Yeah. And you see it almost every, you know, while everyone's at home, every other commercial is about coronavirus. And like, they had these ready to go because there's so many different commercials. And it's like, they shouldn't, you know, are they filming these now or they have these in the can ready to go? It's just kind of weird, but it's, you know, it's all about compliance.
Yeah. I would be skeptical if somebody made that claim that they were ready to go. But I would tell you that it is certainly what they are trying to do, which is just have it everywhere as the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of like V for Vendetta when the election is coming up, or not the election, but the
talking about when they have that little like round table scene.
Yes, yes. And when the fifth is coming up. And you know, they want to make sure that no one's going to show up in that square. And so they have this meeting where he, you know, basically, you know, he's reviewing what that is they're going to be talking about on the news, mm-hmm. and what stories to lead with and all those kinds of things. And, you know, at that point, was it, Settler?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Chancellor Settler. And he says, I want everyone to remember why they need us.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was one of the most telling parts of that entire, I mean, of course the movie was a great movie,
right?
You know, no one likes a tyrant. But ironically, some people will work for them.
They will,
you know? So, but I thought it was really neat to see, that narrative of, you know, we control you by the information that we give you.
Yeah, it was nice to see that much honesty in a movie.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, they'll come right out and say it. You know, if you watched any of the that Event 201 coverage, or, you know, mm-hmm. they actually recorded it. And things like Chatham House and those different organizations, they know no one watches their YouTube channels or anything like that. So they just put it right out there. You don't have to read, you know, try to decipher hieroglyphics or break out the red twine. You know, it's just, yeah. It's right there.
Right. Yeah. Breaking out the red twine. You know, what's funny is I've always wanted to have one of those walls.
I do too. Just for the hell of it.
Yes. And part of me, it maybe this is sick, but part of me wants to where, you know, it's like, because when you see it, and, you know, say the person that they're going in and they've got a warrant, mm-hmm. of course, and they're investigating this psychopath or whatever, and they see it on the wall and they're just like, oh my God. And of course, there's usually a picture of the person that they're targeting with their eyes, you know, basically like scribbled out or something, or, you know, or something like that. But to me, it holds a place in my heart somewhere, and I don't mm-hmm. know why, but I do find it fascinating. Maybe that would be an interesting project, would be mm-hmm. to go in and do like almost like a doctrinal level thesis on the bee pigs and draw the lines that maybe they've been investigated to a degree, but mm-hmm. but take it further, you know, and just cover an entire wall. And, you know, like some of the intelligence programs that they have out there where they do all these, you know, relationship analysis and social, you know, basically everybody that's involved or you've ever had contact with and different mm-hmm. things like that. And they take all of this evidence that they've been working together and they put it all together. That would be neat to actually conduct that level of an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Open source, of course.
Sure.
You know, and maybe what you find in the garbage.
You just look at Facebook.
That's right.
It's a digital, you know, it's a digital one of those, basically. It's
contact Alex Jones periodically, you know.
Check on the gay frogs. Get some super male vitality.
You know, the irony there is he wasn't completely wrong about any of that. And that's why it's so funny, because, you know, people discredit him, but, you know, he's probably right about 70% of the time.
Well, that's what he usually does. I mean, he admits that it's for entertainment, but he'll just put a nugget of truth in there mm-hmm. and then spin it up.
Yeah.
But,
I might be guilty of that periodically too.
We all are.
I start some handbag fights on Twitter and then I just kind of sit back and watch my handiwork.
Yeah. Just roll that frag into the room and see what happens.
Yes. Yes. And then when it gets too bad, I just cut sling lib.
Yeah. Just mute the whole conversation.
Well, I mean, I don't mute it, because sometimes this is what's really funny is, you know, those kinds of handbag fights bring out some of the worst statists, and you just watch it unfold. And sometimes they'll surprise you, because you think, wait, no, I thought this guy was a libertarian.
Yeah.
Wait, what? You know, and next thing you know, he's like reporting, you know, he's adding, you know, the little at and then the FBI or something like that. And you're like, what?
I've seen that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. They get mad. They get mad.
That's such a little bitch move.
It is. It is. If you don't like what somebody says and you don't really think it's worth your time to try to change their mind, just mute them. And if muting doesn't work, or if you think that, like, for instance, and this has actually happened to me, where you think that they may actually try to dox you, or try to hack you or get into some of your, you know, your sensitive, you know, information, then at that point, just block them.
Yeah.
You know,
that's usually what I
do. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I quit trying to argue with every freaking person because A, it doesn't work. And B, it does nothing but just stress you out. Because some people, you can tell. I think it was Michael Bolden from 10th Amendment Center was saying, you can find out real quick whether or not someone wants to actually have a honest conversation. He goes, the second you realize they don't, block them and move on. Don't even waste your time with it.
Yeah. It's, I've tilted at windmills before and I know what that's like. And I know the desire to try to change somebody's mind, but you can only change the minds of people who are willing.
And that's true. That's a lot of times it's not for the person you're actually debating with. It's for whoever's paying attention to it.
That's right. Yeah. Cause there are people that will go in and they'll follow the link or follow some of the things that you say and you don't even realize it, or they come back later. You know, it's after the whole thread is blown up and it's all over the place and there's the four letter words being dropped everywhere and all the ad hominems. And at that point, there's somebody that might actually look at that link. So there is value there.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but sometimes I let other people fight my battles for me on Twitter, because if you get to a point where you just say, you know what, this person's not worth my time.
Yeah.
But you see other people continuing to engage them.
Right.
I like to encourage them. And the way I do that is I like and retweet what they say, even if I've already muted that other person or maybe even blocked that other person.
Right.
I do that simply because at that point, it maybe it encourages them if they knew that that's what I'm doing. And then the other thing is that it kind of brings out it increases the number of engagements that that argument gets, which means it gets more exposure.
Correct.
And I also like to see that ratio. That ratio is always very delicious.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that. There's certain accounts. I have a handful that if I just don't want to deal with it, I'll at them into the conversation because they live for it.
Yeah.
And you probably know some of the ones I'm talking about, too.
Oh, yeah. I get that.
Because they're young.
People at me too. Yeah.
they're young. They have the energy and the time to do it. So,
yeah.
Like, hey, you guys want some of this? They're like, yeah, tag me in there. I'm like, all right, cool. And then I'll just check back in and have a laugh. And yeah, like you said, I'll share it, like it, and just laugh my ass off. And someone's getting.
Well, lost. I mean, if you're not here for the entertainment, and if you're not here for the, I think. It's pretty obvious that it's a good, there's a good level-headed interest in finding the truth, sharing the truth with other people, trying to have, you know, entertaining debates and discussions. But as soon as it starts to get outside of that, you know, it's like every person has their threshold.
Right.
You know, and some people will punch out, you know, maybe too late after they've already, you know, wasted their breath for hours. And I think to myself, and it's not because I think that I'm more important than anyone else. It's just that after a while you start to realize that you can kind of figure out the ones that are worth even arguing with after probably after the first two or three engagements, you can figure out if it's someone who actually is interested and is trying to find out more information about something versus somebody who literally, I saw this the other day and I don't even want to mention who it was, but I saw this the other day. One person just said, oh, I'm just here enjoying watching you waste your time. And I thought to myself, you know, that's exactly what trolls do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
that's
probably made a good call. Yeah, probably made a good call to mute him like within 15 minutes of the discussion. But every now and then I go back and I look at the, you know, the show anyway, even if right. they're muted, just to see what they're saying. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I made the right call on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll check out the laser pointer on the wall for a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you're not going to waste my whole afternoon.
No. I'm not going to get my blood pressure up over it. I'll just let someone else deal with it who enjoys dealing with it. So
yeah,
there is one. We got into this one. My favorite one is the guys that you can tell they probably used to hang out at that when malls were still a thing, and they hang out at like the knife shop in the mall looking at like all those weird swords.
Yeah.
You know
the type.
Yeah. And
usually wear a trench coat.
Yeah, had the Metallica haircut where it was shaved on the sides and they had the ponytail. Yeah, those guys. Well, it was this type of guy, and he was talking about how guns are useless, and you know, that's why he likes knives, and starts talking all this stuff, and like I'm like, all right, you're an idiot. And mm-hmm. I kind of pop in and make a comment, usually just not really outright like being mean, but just point out how stupid the argument is. And he kept popping up over a couple of days, and I started looking into it, and then come find some posts, the dude, the damn pedophile.
Oh jeez.
So I typically don't report people, but I reported that shit because he started harassing some chick.
Oh no, you have to in that regard, because unfortunately we're hamstrung. We can't do what we know needs to be done with pedophiles. So the best
fire
you can
up
do,
the wood chipper.
Yeah. Exactly. But at least the best you can do is just hand them off to somebody that will, you know, look into it, just simply because, especially when it comes to that, I don't mess with that.
No,
I got three kids, so.
Yeah. I don't, but I'm an uncle to a lot of people. So, I get it. And I'd actually say like I had screenshots of it, and I probably wasn't the only person that reported him, but, I think it was, I commend Twitter for actually doing it. No longer had I reported it than 5 minutes later, they nuked him.
Wow.
Yeah.
He must have not known the rest of the Twitter staff, because otherwise they would have shadow banned you and
gave him a blue check mark.
Like you were, giving him a blue check mark. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, so I'll quit sidetracking you now.
No, it's fine. You don't have to do any of it. I can do it all myself.
I can do bad all by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So back onto the bee pigs thing. Do you want to unpack that a little bit for those that might not know about it? And then we can kind of go into, I don't know, really we can go into whatever you want to do. That's fine.
Yeah. So I gave it a name just simply because it seemed like there was almost a universal understanding that there are overlords, and these overlords somehow can control all of our lives, but at the same time, it's somehow laughed off as a joke. But it's almost double speak in the fact that people, and it could be the same person that would say, you know, oh yeah, those rich people, or you know, they have the power to do whatever it is that they want. But at the same time, when you suggest that those rich people maybe own everyone else, then they just think, you know, well, that's crazy. I mean, that's crazy. How could that be? And so it's one of those difficult areas to discuss, which is why I think a lot of people avoid it, quite frankly. And I'm not really known to avoid You know, if there's a warning sign, you know, do not enter, I'm kind of there. So
kind of makes you want to go in.
It does. Yeah. And mainly because, you know, why do people talk about our owners? I mean, you know, even comedians, you know, will joke about it, you know, and stuff like that. So it's not a completely taboo subject, but yet if some people mention it, it's almost like a party foul in a social setting. And I wonder to myself, like, why is that? But anyway, so I went down this journey just simply because I wanted to appease some of the things that I had been raised to believe, and tease it as to whether it was true. Was it all just a Santa Claus story meant to scare a teenager from doing certain things or keeping them away from certain things? I really didn't know. But as I went into it, I developed the term, you know, and it's because everybody hears the, you know, the pentaveret, right? You know, mm-hmm. The one comedian refers to it as the pentaveret, right?
Well, it's like that little scene from So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yes, yes, the pentaveret. You know, it's the Queen, the Rothschilds, the Gettys.
And Colonel Sanders before he went tits up.
Yeah. The Vatican. That was the
other one. Yeah, that was the other one.
Yeah. So I know that we can't be controlled without banksters. Because if you control the money, you control the people. So banksters was an obvious one for me. The elite. Now, that's kind of a universally accepted term for people who make decisions about other people's future. Pedophile. Now, the P in B-Pigs, I picked that one specifically because they insist on remaining secret. They're secretive. If there's very few B-Pigs that are actually a well-known name. There's very few that are kitchen table recognized. Most of them are not. And it's because they have that much power and that much money that they can actually pay for anonymity. And so the pedophile part really came from my understanding of the fact that it's pedophile rings that are always, always discussed, but no one actually ever catches them. And when I mean rings, I don't mean like two or three or four people sharing child porn. I'm talking about the ugly stuff like Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska, type of stuff.
Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, yeah. The people that can actually make an investigator go away by having his plane crash with his daughter in it with him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, those kinds of stories that you look into, the fact that the story that was supposed to be on, like, I think it was Nightline TV or something like that, it was back in the 80s. They actually canceled the show. Mm-hmm. They actually never aired it.
Well, it's just like what happened, was it NBC or ABC, about the Jeffrey Epstein? They wouldn't let her run a story like a couple, like 2 years ago, because they would lose access to print Harry and Meghan, mm-hmm. because of, you know, what they're, you know, Prince Andrew and all that stuff. But, you know, yeah, Jeffrey Epstein is another one. I think that's why he's dead, because he screwed up and got famous.
Yeah, I think he was probably the recruiting branch, mm-hmm. Of the B-Pigs, which means that he is a known. And of course, you know, he does have associates, and people do recognize, you know, because of the pictures and stuff like that. But there were so many wealthy that he interfaced with that it was almost like camouflage, mm-hmm. to where the real sex offenders and people like that, you know, the ones that were involved in the raping the girls and stuff like that, that I don't even know what the number is now, but the number is so high of girls that have all come out and said that, you know, this happened and that happened to them. And of course there's investigations and stuff to ensure the validity of their claims, but there's so many now that I think it got to a point where they just realized that it was out of control. I'm still skeptical about whether Epstein is even dead,
mm-hmm.
just because of the way the whole thing was handled and how it happened. It just, there's something not right there. I can't really put my finger on it. I can't say, well, because of this picture, it wasn't really Epstein. Look at the ear. It's different. Mm-hmm. And I've seen all those.
Right.
But none of that is conclusive enough for me. But I will tell you that my hackles are up about the whole story, about whether he's actually dead,
right.
About the circumstances of the quote unquote suicide, you know, and stuff like that. I do like to see that Epstein didn't kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be possible that he didn't kill himself. He might still be alive. So there's right. that. So,
or he didn't kill himself and they killed him.
And they killed him, right.
Kind of shuttered that franchise, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So that's my thinking on that. But he definitely is the first person that people in modern time think of when I talk about the elite pedophiles.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a really good one. And the person that you named earlier, what was that name again?
Jimmy Savile.
Yeah. And he was known, like people everywhere.
Everybody knew him. It'd be like Captain Kangaroo over here, you know, at that certain time, like everybody. And it's like, if you didn't know who it was in England, they're like, you know, are you living in a cave kind of person?
Mm-hmm.
Casey Kasem type guy.
Yes. And I think a lot of people suspected him.
Mm-hmm. Johnny Rotten called him out back mm-hmm. then?
Yeah. 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 So I think that's one of those that is, fairly obvious, but I kind of view them as more like the managers.
Mm-hmm.
They're managing those types of activities, and that's how they're known. That's how they hide,
mm-hmm.
the whole Podesta thing. That's another, you know, big mystery, whether all the verbiage in the DNC emails were actually accurate about the references to pizza and the children. I'm skeptical of some of what I've read, but for the most part, I am inclined to think that it's probably more true than it isn't.
Right.
You know, because this was the first time that you actually had a chance to look that far beyond the curtain. And the DNC email/Seth Rich situation is a perfect example of how successful they are at making things disappear,
mm-hmm.
and people not be investigated. But I got my start in a lot of this going back to the days of the John Birch Society. My dad was an early member of the John Birch Society. And talked about the Illuminati and the group that was going to take over the United States. They were communists, and they were going to basically subvert the United States. And if you ever go back and you listen to any of the videos from the John Birch Society, it's almost eerie. Because at the time, when you listen to it, you think, like back when he was actually, you know, doing these videos or mm-hmm. or audio in some cases, because we used to listen to it on a copy of a copy of a copy of an audio tape that, you know, was you know, handed from one person to the other in the cloakroom, right. you know. And that was back in the early 80s, the late 70s. And so that's where the Illuminati part of B-Pigs came into play. So I'm kind of spelling them out one by one. But,
right.
you know, that's kind of where I got my start, believe it or not. And I still think that there's something to the claims and the secret societies and how they control people and how they – you know, they date back probably further than probably what investigations have even revealed. But it's kind of interesting to explore. And then the globalist part, I felt like the globalist term was probably better than just communist. Because it's easy to just call anyone a communist.
Mm-hmm.
But to call someone a globalist, they usually call themselves globalists.
Right.
And I thought to myself, okay, so their goal, you know, yours and my goal is different than theirs in the fact that they want to destroy any sense of sovereignty in a nation, not because they hate government.
Mm-mm.
Like you or I would thrive and would love to be free of the shackles that comes with having a government.
Yeah, I just want to be left alone.
Exactly. But their goal is to subvert the sovereignty only because they want to institute global government,
mm-hmm.
just like they do with their globalist efforts.
Yeah, they want to. Well, they want to subvert the sovereignty of the individual.
Well, and what I would say is that the government does that,
right?
Right, and they want to subvert the government sovereignty because they want to basically run everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like, to a degree, they're worse than government, though they usually use government to institute most of what it is they're trying to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it means is that while the government has a great propensity to be the enemy of the people, they're not even the worst enemy. And so that's where I was trying to get at with the B-Pigs, because if you can understand what their goals are and what it is that they want to do, which every now and then they do make public their plans. And it seems like they're not really ashamed of that either.
Especially this day, it's almost like kind of rubbing your nose in it.
Yeah.
When they just come right out and say it.
Yeah. And then the last category, which seems to be the most pressing, it seems lately, which is the satanic Luciferian Moloch worshiping, you know, all the words that you can throw at it. It really, what it comes down to is that they sacrifice children in one sense or in another. Mm-hmm. And I'll get to that here in a second. I'm cleaning my firearms while I'm talking to you. And
nice. I should have brought mine.
You know, well, it's good multitasking.
Yeah, that's true.
And the thought here, as far as, you know, why they do this, you know, kind of goes back in a lot of ways to, you know, Planned Parenthood, the history behind Planned Parenthood, the efforts behind the abortion, the quote unquote, you know, Roe v. Wade process and all that kind of stuff. And to me, and I don't pull punches about this, I think that is just a subset of what it is that they do I do believe that they have a desire to sacrifice children. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a literal sacrifice. And then in other ways, it's just a almost like a proverbial sacrifice. Like, you know, if they're defending the Roe v. Wade, then they get credit for that somehow. You know, all of those children that are sacrificed. But it goes beyond that, because then you get into the adrenochrome. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is why this is a very pertinent subject right now, because there are people who don't believe that that's a thing, and there are people that believe that that's all made up. And the truth of the matter is, it's probably the absolute hardest thing to prove, because how are you going to prove that without catching them actually physically in the act?
Right.
I don't know how you would. I don't know how you would go about doing that, but there have been enough reports of people who have been under the control of satanic Luciferian cults or occults, mm-hmm. that have talked about how they make people suffer, and they make children suffer in the effort to basically put them in a state of panic. And then they drink their blood. And I think that to me, when I heard that back in the 80s, and that's how long ago I knew about it. When I heard about it back in the 80s, I thought, oh, that's awful. That's terrible. There's no way that they're doing that. I mean, who could be that evil, mm-hmm. to do something like that? And now it seems like there's a resurgence of people who are claiming that that is actually still happening. And the more that I've looked into it, you know, again, I seriously doubt that anyone's going to come out and say, I have proof. It's right here. I brought it with me. But there are people who claim that that was done to them. And I think that what people are going to find out down the road is that there is proof.
Mm-hmm. It seems like
you and I,
people that come out against this stuff, really, a lot of them die in weird circumstances too.
Yeah, that too. There's that. Yeah, you know, whether it was the whole Seth Rich, you know, being mugged but nothing was taken for dropping the emails about the DNC mm-hmm. email hack, the fact that. The WikiLeaks guy came out and said, oh, you know, and he referenced Seth Rich specifically when they were talking about the DNC email hack, mm-hmm. On numerous interviews, and the fact that, you know, I don't know if he's in witness protection, because all of this is going to come out in the future, which that's the optimist part of me, mm-hmm. or if they're just holding him indefinitely with the plans to, you know, basically Epstein him as well.
Yeah, it seems like that's what they're trying to do with Julian Assange.
Yes, Assange, sorry. I was, sometimes I have this mind blank, and without it being right in front of me, which it's not, because I didn't do any notes today. I'm stepping out into a new part of my podcasting experience, which is just to talk with people about what's on my mind.
Yeah, well, that's what the smoke pit's for.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people like that and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. The notes are really just to help me. But I found that maybe it sounds just a little too rehearsed or planned. And so I was just kind of going off of, but that means I don't have notes in front of me.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's the S is really where the ugly part is, I think. And the main reason is just simply because if that is true, you have to do like the if then statement, right? If that is true, then there's a lot bigger problems in the world than what people realize.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for people to accept.
Yeah. That's the part you see them gloss over.
Yeah. If we're living in a world where, you know, people like Hillary Clinton or Podesta or some of these other people are actually involved in that kind of stuff, and yet there's still people out there that would do the whole hashtag I'm with her.
Oh, especially after it's known that she defended pedophiles and joked about it.
Yes. I do remember that. Yeah. So, it's kind of a sobering, somber discussion. I apologize for that, but you know,
it's needed.
I think it's a conversation. Yeah. It's a conversation that needs to be had. I think it needs to be discussed. You know, I think it needs, I'm not trying to make it like everybody talks about it at the kitchen table, you know, or dining room table kind of thing at dinner, which by the way, apparently people are eating together more now than they have in the past. My wife was telling me that, there's a blog that she goes to, and I guess it's, I don't remember if it was Dave Ramsey or what, but she said that there are people on there that are panicking because they're like, I'm not used to making this many meals. Like, I don't know what to make my kids. They won't eat this. They won't eat that. You know, my wife is one of those people that, you know, you eat what's in front of you.
Yeah.
That's how we were raised that way. Both
same
her and
here.
I both. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all these, you know, all these parents that are like, well, they won't eat this, so I just give them this because otherwise it's a pain. It's a fight. And I don't want to have to go through all that. And I'm thinking, you know, you're doing your kids a huge disservice, you know, not having them eat vegetables. And then all of a sudden, you know, you find out that they have deficiencies and, you know, mineral deficiencies or vitamin deficiencies. Maybe it stunted their growth, you know, or their bone structure. There are people that will grow up and they have like, they didn't get enough minerals while they were in development. And so they end up with like improper bone density and they're being told that they have the bone density of a 70-year-old, you know, and that happens. I'm not saying it happens to everybody that doesn't eat their vegetables, but it happens enough that there's, you know, there's a reason why those are, you know, supposed to be a vital part of your diet. And, you know, parents who don't have their kids eat that. But anyway, I'm going down a rabbit hole.
We're not meant to live off of stuff that comes out of a box.
Exactly. And the treats and the snacks and all that kind of stuff. It's just not, but you know, it's kind of funny because right now everybody is, you know, like, I don't know what to make, you know, and it's, my wife thought it was pretty entertaining to see that because it's like, well, your parents probably made you eat it and you decided you didn't like that. And so you changed that about parenting and decided you weren't going to be your parent.
Right.
That's probably what happened there.
Yeah. Yeah. I overheard some people talking and they were like, you know, we've been holding the kids for 3 days and it's just so crazy because they're like, oh, I'm bored. I'm like, give them something to do. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, give them chores to do, make them busy. And then very quickly, they will learn how to make themselves busy.
Yes, exactly. When I was a kid, we disappeared. My mom, she would wake up, especially in the summer, because my dad would have all these chores and he would give my mom the chores that we were supposed to do for the day. And my mom would wake up. Now, she was one of those ones that actually liked to sleep in. And so she would wake up and we would be gone. And she would look out on the clothesline, you know, the clothes that she had hung out the night before. And the clothes that we were in were on the ground. And the new clothes that we were wearing were missing from the line. We were gone.
That's awesome. It's the same thing in the Army. You know, don't look available, look busy.
Right. Yeah.
So someone's going to find something for you to do real fast. I'm like,
well, I had a Sergeant Major once tell me, he said, go over there to that Foot Locker and pull out a clipboard. So I went over there, you know, the tack box, right? So I go over there and I open it and I pull out a clipboard. He's like, put you a couple sheets of paper on here. He's like, and take a pen and you go around and you just start taking notes and observing what people are doing. He's like, I want to see how long you're out there before somebody asks you what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Do you know that I was out there for like an hour, hour and a half, and not a single person said anything to me? I went back and I gave him the clipboard back, you know, and of course I was eager to get back to work because I was young.
Right.
And you know, he was like, well, that there, right there just proves my theory. If you look busy, nobody will ask you to do anything.
That's it. And having a clipboard makes you look official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Appeal to authority. Right.
Right.
He's got a clipboard and he's writing stuff down.
It must be. I mean, he's not sitting legit. There. Yeah, it must be legit because nobody would do that if it wasn't.
So. You could be do it.
Yeah, it was kind of a fun.
For all they know, fun experiment. Around drawing wieners on a notebook, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Getting girls' phone numbers for later.
You want to hit at the PX later?
Yeah. Well, it wouldn't have been a phone number because you know nobody had cell phones then.
That's true.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. I didn't get
but anyway.
I didn't get one until I was 25.
Right. Yeah. I so this last section, the S on BPigs.
Right.
What I found was that this mirrors what some people have thought, but never actually. It's sort of like collapsitarian, right? I mean, after people hear collapsitarian and they kind of hear the pitch and they understand that it's literally like a fatalism in a sense where you just, it's not going to be fixed. The only way out is for it to come crashing down around you. I think that this is one of those things as well, which is just that it explains something that people maybe have suspected or thought, or it's been somewhere deep inside in a voice that they never actually said out loud. And then when it's explained to them, they're like, oh, that makes sense. I get that. That's not everybody, of course. I think that most sheep would look at that and say, that's ridiculous. Where did you ever come with that? You're weird. Which I'm glad to say I am, because if weird means I'm not one of the sheep, then I'll take weird every day.
Yeah, weird's fun though.
Yeah, I get away with a lot.
That's
somewhere between that and my ADHD, I get away with a lot.
Yeah, well, I got away with a lot because I married someone as weird as me. So
and my wife is normal.
Yeah,
and so. You know, my only advantage there is that her brother was also ADHD. So she kind of knows how to deal with me.
Right.
Which is good because, you know, if she didn't, then it would be like problems. Right. So, I'm glad that she understands me as well as she does. Instead of trying to figure me out, she doesn't bother.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been married long enough to where she's like, yeah, I just know you're weird and a dork and it's cool. Like, pretty much. Now we're dealing with I've got a little bit of hearing loss now. So we're dealing with the it's not that I'm not listening to you, I just didn't hear you issue.
Oh yeah, no, I have that too. And because I've had selective listening for a long time.
Oh sure.
But I've gotten to the point now where I'm just brutally honest. And before I didn't know how to do that. And so I would try to play it off. Mm-hmm. And all that did was get me in more trouble, especially with my ex-wife. It got me into a lot of trouble with my ex-wife because she thought, you know, if you're not listening to me, then you don't care. Well, that's not necessarily true, because when you have ADHD, it just means that you have too many things you care about. That that your mind is just frequency hopping all the time, and it she saw it as, well, I'm, you know, you're not a priority, or I'm not a priority. And so that always caused a problem for me. And I've learned to, you know, figure out how to try to turn my hyper focus on when someone is talking to me, mm-hmm. and listen to them. But there are times, and I did it this morning, actually. We had an early lunch today, and I did it. My wife was making something, and she was telling me something, and she was about halfway into her little story, and a word came through my ears that pricked my interest. And I was immediately, I jumped to her conversation, but I had lost enough of what she was saying that it didn't have the same, it didn't process the same right. in my brain, where I was like, wait, where is this coming from? What is, you know, and you're trying to catch up and you're trying to take and pick every single word apart. Like, what, okay, now that I have this new information, what is it that I missed before? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're trying to do this in like, you know, microseconds, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden you come to the realization, wait, no, you caught me. I wasn't paying attention. Right. I missed the first part of the conversation. And now you have my interest. And I apologize. I would like to know more.
that's me.
And that happens to me pretty often.
Yeah, because especially if I'm reading something, my ears shut off.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, she's like, did you not hear what I said? I'm like, I'm sorry, I wasn't even listening. I was like, I was reading something, but I'm listening now. And right. So, yeah.
Now you have my attention.
Yeah.
That was something I had to learn is I had to, it's almost like you have to have a safe word with your wife
mm-hmm.
that if she needs your attention right away, there's a certain way that she has to get it. And if not, then you run a good chance of missing what she's going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're still working on that.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to tell her, I think I'm just going to tell my wife to say, you know, I know a phrase that would really work for me, and it would be, you know, if you really want my attention, just start it out by saying, hey, I saw some ammo on sale.
Right.
I'll stop whatever the hell I'm doing.
Especially now.
Yeah. And I'll say where.
Yeah.
And I'll like, and you got me.
You know. This ad says free ammo.
Yeah.
What, where?
Or, hey, do you want to buy another rifle? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm talking about these drapes. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Now I'm listening.
Now I'm listening. You got me.
Yeah. I think that would only work a couple times, and then I would end up getting mad. Because I would feel like it's unfair.
Right.
Like it's an unfair advantage.
Well, that's true.
So the elite, I think that it's not a new concept in any way. It's just that I tried to broaden the term enough that it has a certain weight to anyone, because quite frankly, in those subject lines of the bee pigs, there's something in there that means something to someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you don't have kids, then, you know, maybe universally pedophiles are just hated, which is good.
Yes, it is good.
And for some reason, it seems like, I don't know if you remember, about a year ago, there was that effort for a minor attracted person, the MAP.
Oh, they're still pushing that shit.
Yeah. So when that happened, there was even an effort to try to block everyone who was a part of that movement. Or report them and then block them or whatever.
Right.
But I sometimes I wonder if maybe it's a social experiment, or maybe there are actually people who believe that way, or, and this could be even more likely, it's a social experiment by getting people who believe that way to conduct that type of an activity. And that is why I think that there's some things that can't go unanswered. It has to be dealt with. people have to push back on stuff like that. Just the same as when, you know, somebody comes on and says, you know, yeah, I think all guns should be banned. You know, mm-hmm. that's not something that you just mute that person. No. That's something where you meme the shit out of them. Uh-huh. I mean, we're talking like a full-on, you know, tirade of
memetic onslaught.
And yes, like a blitzkrieg type warfare, which there for a while was happening with some of the efforts for the gun control in Virginia.
Yes.
Prior to all of this getting crazy.
Oh, the timeline was hot.
Yeah. And every time they would come out and say something, and I was participating in that quite a bit. I think
you I was too. But that's, I actually had some really productive conversations too.
Yeah.
But then you could
a lot of followers that way too, because
yeah,
you know, it was like, hey, wait, you know, it's like these anarchists aren't that bad. You know, they hate gun controllers. What?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because unfortunately there's way too many people out there that have that persona of an anarchist is someone who throws Molotov cocktails, mm-hmm. you know, at Starbucks. And you know, it's not that I don't have plans to throw Molotov cocktails. It just means that I need to save them for the valuable targets.
Yeah. It doesn't even mean there's no moral code either.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, cause you know, it depends on what kind
of, there's so many different kinds of freaking people that will attach anarcho to whatever. And a lot of it, mm-hmm. it's two words that don't go together. And I'm like, you obviously don't know the definition of either one of those.
Yeah. I will tell you, there's a handful. Well, maybe it's a smaller than a handful. Maybe it's a palm full of AMCOMs that I actually can have a decent dialogue and a decent discussion with.
Mm-hmm.
But that number is very low.
Right. Yeah. Those are like the 15 people on Twitter that are like, yeah, we want to do it amongst ourselves, but we don't want to force anyone else to do it. The rest of them are just people that have come went into the libertarian zone because they just didn't fit in anywhere else, but they really mm-hmm. just want the government to do what they want.
And I think you're hitting the nail on the head there, which is that there's a difference between a voluntary, you know, co-op, if you mm-hmm. will, commune style co-op, where, you know, it's not someone trying to use government to abscond your property mm-hmm. in order to redistribute it to other people. It's people that are actually gathering together to basically say, look, I don't want to be a part of all this other, you know, I get it. You know, there's a certain appeal to the anti-consumerist, you know, argument,
mm-hmm.
you know, because after a while it does look pretty sad, you know, mm-hmm. the consumerist movement and stuff. And to a degree, there is some appeal to that, you know, and there's an appeal to people who make handmade things and sell it on Etsy versus, you know, buying it in bulk on Amazon or Costco. You know, those kinds of things are appealing. Mm-hmm. And I get that. But the one thing that everybody seems to miss is that voluntary exchange or the voluntarist mindset, mm-hmm. you know, going back to voluntarism, which I probably don't discuss enough, but mm-hmm. I consider myself a voluntarist and at the same time consider myself an anarcho-capitalist. But first and foremost, I consider myself a collapsitarian because I don't see any of those. I'm not going to call them utopian because they are dystopian.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they accept the fact that bad things are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, look, you know, the best you can do is have a mitigation strategy, but we're not going to run everyone's life in order to make, you know, your wonderful world wonderful.
In that situation, the actions would be addressed, not ability to perform that action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you can have whatever gun you want, but if you murder somebody, you murdered somebody. And that's the part that's wrong.
Right. Right. And in my world, that murder would not go unanswered. In fact, it would probably be prevented by someone who is well versed in the ways of the gun. And the bad guy is the one that's 6 feet under instead of the good guy or the victim, you know, instead of the victim being the person that's 6 feet under, or maybe not 6 feet under, maybe spread all over the ground through a wood chipper. I mean, I'm not one to say how it has to happen. I'm just more along the lines of the fact that the non-aggression principle, I think is pretty universally understood. And yet somehow seems to be the subject of so many handbag fights on Twitter.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Just cracked me up.
And I forget who it was talking about it. They like to call it, instead of the principle, the obligation, because you have an obligation to other people to not aggress against them, which I agree. I think
I don't have a problem with that. If you consider like Immanuel Kant, right? So Immanuel Kant, philosopher, he did a really good, he wrote a really good bit on what later became deontological ethics, which in a sense it focuses more on your obligation to other people and society than it does. I'm switching headphones just really quick.
Sure.
Yeah, there we go. Try to do it seamlessly, but in every time that I try to do that, I fail.
Well, you nailed it that time.
Okay, good. Anyway, so because I have those little earbuds, but you know, they don't last, and they do have better audio than, you know, just a regular headset.
Right.
But once it starts chirping at me, I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah, it's really annoying. That's I still run just regular old headphones when I'm listening to my iPod at work. And because I can't stand when it starts going battery low right in the middle of the good, right in the really good part of good times, bad times, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Can't have that. Anyway, so let's see, where do we leave off? So deontological ethics.
Yes.
So in a sense, Immanuel Kant basically came up with, in his own way, came up with the non-aggression principle because he believed that you were to live your life as though it should be an example to everyone else. And I thought that it was a really interesting study. I took it in a philosophy class, and then we had a ethics class because, you know, philosophy, there's like three parts, right? You got the philosophy, the ethics, and I can't remember what the other one is, but my philosophy teacher would probably kick me in the chin because I don't remember it, but it's been a while. And it was kind of an interesting discussion. Because I had never really bothered ever reading anything from Kant before. And when he hit on the differences between deontological ethics, which is what I subscribe to, and some of the others, what I realized is that, you know, some of the others are where hedonism comes from and collectivism. Collectivism is based on utilitarianism, which is, you know, which is where the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, and those Spockian discussions.
Right.
And what I find interesting is that here in the probably the least expected place in philosophy is where I come on this really interesting argument that supports my belief system. And of course, I was kind of new to the libertarian thing at the time. I wasn't a full anarchist yet at the time. I was somewhere between, you know, Ron Paul can can make everything better. In the libertarian world, and you know, so the voting and all that kind of stuff, you know, that belief system, you know, versus the, well, maybe we don't want to give them any credence, like don't encourage them, sort of like who was it, Claire Wolf said, don't vote, it only encourages them,
right?
Don't
feed the troll.
Right. So, you know, there's some interesting discussions that occurred in that time of my life. And I think it was a lot of fun. It was also a period where it was the Bureau Crash era. And I don't know if you are familiar with the Bureau Crash time frame, but it was on the tail end of everybody realizing that the effort that Ron Paul was making was wonderful and it had changed a lot of minds in 08, 07, mm-hmm. 08, but that was the best it was going to do. It was never actually going to win.
Right.
And someone came up with this idea, and I don't really remember because the website's not there anymore, but what it did was it gave a lot of libertarians at the time, especially young, you know, new, you know, fresh libertarians, mm-hmm. it gave them a place to go to discuss with other libertarians. And that was a new thing. I mean, Facebook was not in existence yet. Classmates.com was sucked basically. And MySpace was, you know, basically filled with teenagers that wanted everybody to listen to their music. And so there wasn't really a good place for it. And so Bureau Crash came around, and it got a lot of libertarians in touch with each other, and there was a lot of really good projects. That's where Adam Kokesh got his ideas was from there. That's okay. Where it originated. In fact, I knew Adam Kokesh back then.
Oh wow.
We used to discuss things on Bureau Crash quite often. And another one was Pete. I feel terrible. I'm not remembering his Ayers. Pete Ayers. Mm-hmm. I think he's the one that started Cop Block.
Okay.
And so I hope that I'm right. Somebody out there, they'll be able to look that up. They'll be like, no, you were wrong.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the point was is that there was all these divided efforts. And it, basically the belief was it doesn't matter like which one of these you sign on to, just do what it is that you can. You know, another one was another one that came out of that was now I can't remember. Thoreau. It was H.D. Thoreau. There's a website out there with H.D. Thoreau, and it has I almost had it and then I forgot it.
You'll be lying in bed tonight and it'll pop in your head.
I've got it already. Strike the root.
Okay.
Strike the root. So there was a lot of decentralized distributed efforts that were going on then. And that's what I encourage people to do now. These podcasts are a perfect example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, when you asked me to do a podcast, I don't say, well, I don't know how many listeners does he have. I don't care. I mean, if you have two listeners, you and I are enjoying this conversation. We're having a good time.
Yeah.
And somewhere out there, somebody later will pick this up and be like, oh man, I never thought about that way. These are decentralized distributed efforts.
Yeah. It's almost like when they invented the printing press.
Yeah.
And then you could just like mass produce information.
And that scares
it's great. It scares, yep. Yeah, it scares the paper because you don't have control of the narrative anymore.
It scares the government because they can't control the narrative.
Right.
Yeah. And it scares the bee pigs because
we're all talking about them.
Yeah. Exactly. Because the more discussion there is about them, the more people will start to realize what their real agenda is.
Mm-hmm. For people that don't doubt this stuff is going on, find you, you know, people can say whatever they want about law enforcement, but you find the guys that are investigating this stuff that real, that, you know, they're in it and they're really trying to help rescue these children from this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Talk to them. They'll tell you hell, you damn right it's real.
There's a veterans group that's doing that too, by the way.
Veterans for Child Rescue.
Yes.
Yeah. Craig.
Yes. Sawyer. Yep.
Yep. Him and his daughter started it after she was kidnapped.
Yeah, there's and I want to say we have a local chapter up in Tucson, which is not too far from me. And a friend of mine knows the person that does that with the Tucson chapter. I always find it interesting because it's also a great source of information. And I mean, not like information that I want to hear, but information that I need to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I have a daughter.
Exactly. I've got nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty much anyone who attacks innocent people, you know, children or animals for that, you know, for that matter, just anybody that can't defend themselves or they just steal the innocence from people makes me want to start loading magazines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in my case, they're already loaded, but, I'm on my second pistol now. I cleaned my Glock 34 and now I'm cleaning my Glock 17.
Nice. I did that 2 weeks ago, but I needed to go through and wipe them down.
Last weekend I ran an AR and I don't know, I probably went through about 400 or maybe 500 rounds. Mm-hmm. So I'm in the, that's actually laid out and that's next.
Nice.
There we go. That's good. It sounds, you know, I don't clean them often, but when they do, it's like this sense of satisfaction. Like I can go another 1,000 or 5,000 rounds without having to clean it again.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I need to replace the recoil spring in my 17.
How often do you replace those?
Usually about every 5,000 rounds.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably right.
Yeah. And then I'm probably on, I don't know, my fifth or sixth one on that particular.
Yeah. Probably no such thing as too often, really. I mean, if you,
no,
the trigger return spring is the one that you have to make sure that you get after.
Yeah.
It's the one that's down inside the back where the actual trigger, where you can lighten up your trigger, you know, from a 5.5 pound.
Yeah,
where the disconnector is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that spring that goes on the disconnector is definitely one that you want to check. So every so often, I want to say it's like 7,000 rounds on that.
Something like that. I've got,
yeah,
I'm on my second one on those. I've got a put together an armorer's kit because I kind of streamlined and I went all Glock handguns, just not for any particular reason. It's just once I got into them, I just, you know, how fancy do I need a hammer to be?
Mm-hmm. It's a good standard anyway.
Yeah. It's a Honda Civic of handguns.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And so, I put together like a armorer's kit with all the springs and all that kind of stuff, and just
those little red containers and black containers that have all the little dividers with the little clear lid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I should take stock in companies like that because I probably have way too many of those.
Yeah, and I don't buy the ones specifically for gun stuff. I just go to Walmart and get the cheap tackle box.
Yeah, I use the ones that you can get from Lowe's, Home Depot, and if somebody says, well, I just don't have the funds, go to Harbor Freight and get them in Harbor Freight. They're a little bit thinner. They're not quite as durable, but you're going to save some money.
You will. And it's going to be sitting on your bench anyway. Mm-hmm. It's not like it's going to be put in and out of the back of the truck. So,
right.
Yeah, that Northern Tool probably has some stuff like that too.
Yes, Northern Tool. That's another good company right there.
Ooh, I love Northern Tool. Well, cool, man. I think that's probably a good place to cut it. I've really enjoyed talking with you, and I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
Well, I have one last thing I want to say.
Yeah, go for it.
And it's not a prediction, but it is something I've been thinking about a lot. And that is that I've heard some rumors that during this pandemic, mm-hmm. and all the quarantines, that supposedly there's going to be some arrests made. Again, I fall in the category of I want to believe. Mm-hmm. I am always skeptical of information like that, but at the same time, if there's anybody that's working in that direction to try to bring the bee pigs, if you will, to justice, mm-hmm. I support it 100%. And if that ends up happening, this might end up becoming a lot more discussed topic as people start to ask more and more questions about what's going on. Hopefully that's my goal.
Mm-hmm. I hope that is something that happens.
Yeah. So just keep your eyes open, you know, and see what plays out, in all of this. But I've heard it from about six different people, four of which I know really well and trust. And so when that happens, you know, that's at that point, it stops becoming a coincidence and you start thinking maybe there is something to it. I don't know.
That's true. Yeah. You hear that bird chirp more than once and, mm-hmm. you know, might want to start looking in that direction.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure. Well, like I said, it's really good talking to you, man. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. I know we've had a lot of good back and forth on Twitter, joking around, and we're definitely into a lot of the same stuff. So it's good to kind of virtual meet you.
100%. I agree. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate you having me on too.
Yeah, no problem, man. And anytime you want to come on, man, just let me know and we'll get it scheduled. So.
All right.
Always like having good people come by the smoke pit.
Well, you know, that's a good name. I like the smoke pit. I think that's a good name that you came up with, because if you go back to our military time, you know, that was where you had the best conversations of the day.
Mm-hmm. Trying to solve all the world's problems.
Yep.
All of each other's problems.
Yep.
And, yeah. And that's kind of what, I guess if I had to put a mission statement on the show, is that I'm really just trying to get a lot of the vet guys to kind of wake up. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that's what a lot of guys struggle with when they get out. And I think that's what a lot of the moral injury comes from. And
I agree 100%. I've said the same thing. Yeah.
Hopefully I've gotten some messages saying that, you know, they've really enjoyed the show and it really helped. And that's, you know, I'm only what, 8 episodes in. So I'm glad I'm helping somebody.
Well, so. Good. I'm glad you had me on. I do appreciate it, as it's, you know, it's kind of like, you look at it and you think, okay, you know, big problems never get solved right away.
No,
they take a constant effort, and for people who put in that effort, they are the ones that say, you know what? Okay, so this is your way of fixing this problem. I'm just glad you're working at the problem. Mm-hmm. And that's what it takes. It takes a large number of people just hacking away. But, you know, just like going back to Henry David Thoreau, you have to strike the root. And I think that that's one of those things that you're doing successfully.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Of course.
Pretty humbling. But all right, man. Well, I hope you have a good rest of the day. And
thanks.
Hope you guys are doing well out there. If you need anything, let me know.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right.
Stay safe in Georgia.
You too, man. Thank you.
All right. Yep.
Take care.
You too.